Have you ever woken at 3 a.m. with your heart pounding, gripped by a terror you can't quite name? That nameless dread might be the most honest moment of your day. We spend our lives building elaborate fortresses against a single truth. We will die. We accumulate wealth, chase fame, have children, create art, all magnificent distractions from the one certainty we share. Yet what if confronting this fear directly, rather than fleeing from it, could transform how we live? This isn't about morbid obsession, but radical honesty. Death casts a shadow over everything we do, whether we acknowledge it or not. The question isn't whether mortality shapes our choices, but whether we'll let it do so consciously or unconsciously. Self-awareness is both blessing and curse. A deer doesn't lie awake contemplating its eventual demise. We do. From the moment we develop consciousness, we carry what might be called our mortal wound, the knowledge that this vibrant, feeling self will one day cease to exist. Children first brush against this reality through small deaths, a crushed butterfly, autumn leaves, a grandparent's absence. These encounters go underground during elementary years, only to resurface dramatically in adolescence through horror films, dark humor, and the reckless invincibility complex that sends teenagers speeding down highways at midnight. Young adults typically suppress death concerns while building careers and families. Why think about endings during beginnings? But midlife arrives like an uninvited guest, bringing the unsettling recognition that we've crossed life's summit. The slope now descends. Suddenly, that mirror reflection looks suspiciously like our parents did. Those someday dreams start feeling urgently finite. Since constant death awareness would paralyze us, we develop sophisticated psychological defenses. Some seek symbolic immortality through children or creative works. Others embrace religious beliefs promising eternal life. Many live heroically, convinced they're exempt from mortality's reach. Despite our defenses, death anxiety lurks in consciousness's hidden corners. Background music for some, a 3 a.m. alarm for others. Death anxiety rarely announces itself directly. Consider Susan, a composed accountant who unraveled when her son was jailed for drug possession. Her excessive reaction revealed deeper concerns, especially given the bandage from recent cosmetic surgery timed with her 60th birthday. Her son wasn't just her child, he was her immortality project. His imprisonment symbolized the failure of her bid for permanence. Every nightmare contains escaped death anxiety. Those dreams of faceless murderers or endless falling aren't random neural firings. They're your psyche processing what you've refused to acknowledge while awake. Once Susan recognized her son as her immortality vehicle, she left accounting to pursue running a bed and breakfast. Rollo May's insight proves invaluable. Anxiety about nothing tries to become anxiety about something. When patients present inexplicable anxiety, exploring connections to death awareness often reveals the true source. Death awareness enriches life rather than diminishing it. Think of Scrooge's transformation after glimpsing his neglected corpse, or cancer patients who report that illness taught them how to live. Though death physically destroys us, the idea of death can save us by awakening us to life's preciousness. Heidegger distinguished two modes of existence, the everyday mode, absorbed in appearances and status, and the ontological mode, where we marvel at existence itself, that anything exists at all. Cancer patients often demonstrate this transformation, rearranging priorities, communicating more deeply, appreciating elemental life facts. As one reflected, "What a pity I had to wait till my body was riddled with cancer to learn how to live." Tolstoy's The Death of Ivan Illich illustrates this awakening. Ivan, a self-absorbed bureaucrat facing fatal illness, realizes he's lived badly, shielding himself through preoccupation with prestige. With death imminent, he discovers compassion for his son, servant, even his difficult wife. He dies not in pain, but in the joy of connection. After her husband Albert's death from Alzheimer's, Alice experienced grief, relief, then terror of intruders. A dream revealed the truth. If he can die, then so can I. Moving to a retirement home meant disposing of memory-laden possessions. Seeing Robin's egg blue paint beneath her bookshelves, she recalled the bitter widow who'd sold her the house 40 years earlier. She suddenly grasped transiency, not as abstract concept, but lived reality. She was simply passing through. Yet surprisingly, at 80, she felt happy. She finally had a room of her own, freed from possessions and memories. Julia, a 49-year-old therapist, couldn't recover from a friend's death. Her hypochondria and risk avoidance stemmed from death anxiety. Asked what frightened her about death, she instantly replied, "All the things I would not have done." Though talented in art, she'd abandoned it for psychology, leaving works unfinished. Nietzsche's advice applies: consummate your life. The more unlived your life, the greater your fear of death. Julia's friend's death forced her to confront not just mortality, but dying with gifts unexpressed and her authentic self still buried beneath compromise. Throughout history, philosophers have developed concepts that transform our relationship with mortality. Epicurus argued that death anxiety interferes with life enjoyment. His solution? If we are mortal and the soul doesn't survive, we have nothing to fear. No consciousness, no regrets, nothing. Death is nothing to us, because where I am, death is not. Where death is, I am not. His argument of symmetry holds particular power. Our non-being after death mirrors our state before birth. We don't fear the darkness before existence. Why fear the mirror image after? Of all ideas countering death anxiety, rippling proves singularly powerful. Rippling refers to how each person creates concentric circles of influence affecting others for years or generations. This counters claims that meaninglessness flows from our finiteness. Rippling isn't about preserving personal identity, always futile, but passing on wisdom, virtue, or comfort to others. Nietzsche's eternal recurrence challenges us. How would you feel if forced to live your identical life repeatedly for eternity? If the prospect seems unbearable, you likely haven't lived well. His imperative to become who you are exhorts us to fulfill ourselves and live boldly. Only then can we die without regret. Death creates two forms of loneliness, interpersonal and existential. Existential isolation cuts deeper. It's the unbridgeable gap between individuals and the knowledge that our unique world of memories vanishes with us. This intensifies as death approaches. The greatest service to someone facing death is offering your sheer presence, not advice or platitudes, just relationship. Speak from your heart, reveal your own fears, and hold the suffering one however gives comfort. In cancer therapy groups, patients discovered they could offer an example of how to die with courage and dignity, lifting everyone's spirits through rippling. Gratitude powerfully enhances rippling when expressed directly rather than saved for posthumous eulogies. The truly effective message acknowledges, "I've taken part of you into me. It has changed and enriched me, and I shall pass it on to others." This transforms both giver and receiver, creating meaning that transcends individual mortality. Connection becomes our antidote to death's isolation, not by denying our ultimate aloneness, but by making our brief time together matter deeply. Confront death through rational contemplation to dissolve childhood distortions. Raw terror transforms into manageable awareness. When we grasp our finite nature, life becomes more poignant. Each moment carries weight. Each connection matters. Death anxiety often stems from unfulfilled potential, not unrealized dreams, but dreams you didn't actively pursue. Use regret constructively. Examine what you haven't fulfilled or potential new regrets. How can you live now without building future regrets? The question isn't whether you'll die. You will. The question is whether you'll live fully before you do. Will you become who you are? Will you connect deeply, love fiercely, create boldly? Let death's truth wake you up rather than shut you down. The only way to overcome death's terror is to live so fully that when it arrives, you can meet it with quiet satisfaction.